All right, let's do it. It's round table time.
Camelot. It's only a model.
Well, that's the round table.
By the way, Cal Santa Barbara's up on Baylor at the hall. All right, so if you're watching on TV, they're on the screen. Spoiler alert. We've got Brett Friedlander, columnist, Saturday Road. Brendan Whitted from too many places, but I'll get as many as I can. Bison Express. We're going to talk about Howard. And, of course, Swarm and Sting. The big news is Michael Jordan possibly going to sell his majority stake in the Hornets. As a Hornets fan, Brendan, it's a good day, isn't it?
Not for me, honestly, no.
You liked the state of the franchise?
No, but I mean, like, I think that they were moving in the correct direction. Look, the last few years, they just haven't been able to stay healthy. And I don't attribute that to Michael Jordan. And like that, like LaMelo Ball's been injured, Gordon Hayward's been injured, Rozier's missed out. Like the main state stalwarts of that team have missed significant periods of time. And so I don't chalk that up to Michael Jordan. They haven't even been that bad in the first round. The book night drafting aside, they've been pretty good. You look at Mark Williams, who looks like he's going to be a legitimate player. Mm-hmm. And just from a larger perspective, Michael Jordan is, I mean, he's arguably the best basketball player that the world has ever seen. And the fact that he was able to be one, he's the only black majority owner.
If I had a bell, I would ding it right now. That's the big loss.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because he's also Michael Jordan, right? Like the NBA could have him as an example of, hey, you were the best player in this league's history, and now you are an owner of an NBA franchise. So not only for diversity's sake, but also for the sake of actually, like, you. It'd be like Gretzky owning an NHL team or any of that stuff.
Mario Lemieux owned the Penguins for a while. Brett, do you your thoughts on Jordan getting out of the ownership game? He's going to retain a minority stake, it seems. But Brett, your thought on that?
Here's what I say: if they get the right ping pong ball and get the number one draft, and Victor, the French guy, ends up on the team, it doesn't matter who the owner is.
That's a very good point. Talent does win. The owners, even Dan Gilbert was a good owner the second time, not the first time, the second time when they got LeBron James. Jordan has not been, just the numbers say Jordan is, the team has not been successful as Jordan, was in ownership, in majority ownership. Just like Washington has not been successful with Dan Snyder as the owner of that franchise. And I think the Washington Commandos fan base is way happier than the Charlotte Hornets fan base. Brett, you spent some time up there. What do you think they're going through today?
Oh, I remember the day when there was a waiting list to get tickets for what was then called the Redskins.
Yep.
And now it's just a mess. So yes, I would say a change of ownership is badly needed there. And a change of team name is badly needed there too. Because Commandos is horrible.
It's a terrible name. I they were better off with the Washington football team. All right, Brendan, I know I am going to get to Howard. I promise you we'll get to Howard before we're out of here, but I want to actually make you squirm a little bit. This Duke team is pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, no, they're really good, and they're honestly, they kind of remind me of Carolina from last year, where they look like they're peaking at the perfect time to actually go and make a run of it. Like I'm not one of those people that's like, oh yeah, go ACC with once UNC's out of it. I'm never going to be that person. I don't trust those people at all. But it'll be at least interesting watching this team play, who came in as like super hyped. It's like when they first started off the regular season and then the conference play, it was like, okay, all right, nothing major. And that they've gotten players back healthy, and now they look like the team that they were reported to be. And this is the sort of team that gets high at the right time. We all know that March Madness isn't necessarily the best team all year. It's the best team in March. Yeah, they could absolutely make a run.
Brett Friedlander from Saturday Road, ACC columnist. I asked the question this way. How has this Duke team, in your eyes, changed in the way you look at them in the last, say, 6 weeks?
Two things. First of all, they've gotten healthy. They have only lost one game this season in which they have had all their scholarship players available together. The other thing is the growth. I mean, you look at Derek Lively II. He has become a true rim protector who is now adding an offensive element to his game. He's the guy who's now living up to all the hype that when he first arrived. He's now starting to play that way after missing the entire preseason. Tyrese Proctor, you know, should be in high school now, but he's become a confident, legitimate college point guard. And then you add Dariq Whitehead shooting the way he did yesterday. I mean, the first half, Shire's running out of bounds play for the guy. And to me, that really said a lot because, you know, now he trusts him. And when you keep adding elements like that, you know, I don't think they've reached their ceiling yet. And that, to me, makes them an even more dangerous team than everybody's giving them credit for.
At the beginning of the year, I watched Duke and went, how are they going to score? They can't turn their – there's nobody on the team that can beat their man off the dribble and then create havoc for a defense, which creates opportunities for other people. So I thought John Shire's just going to have to call play after play after play, and I think they're still doing that. But what I didn't believe was possible is possible, and it's happening, is that their defense is incredible. A lot of that is Lively at the rim, but it's also the pressure that Proctor puts on the ball. Roach is pretty good. I don't think he's quite at Proctor's level in defending, but he's good. And Mark Mitchell gives them somebody who can help off of his guy and can guard basically anybody. Their defense is next level.
The Venture X card from Capital One gives you premium travel benefits, perfect for seeing Taylor Swift the Eras Tour, presented by Capital One. Ooh, I do love her. Earn 5x miles on flights and 10x miles on hotels through Capital One Travel.
Enjoy your stay in Suite 13.
Whoa, 13? That's Taylor's lucky number. The Venture X card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
The Jeep Wrangler 4xe. It's electrified. Boogie, woogie, woogie. So you can boogie, woogie, woogie up a mountain, boogie, over creeks, or boogie, woogie, woogie through a desert where you get bit by a pit viper. So you boogie, woogie, woogie back to camp and ask your friends if they'll suck the snake venom out. When they say no, you boogie, woogie, woogie to the nearest hospital for a dose of anti-venom and boogie, woogie, woogie your way to a full recovery. The electrified Jeep Wrangler 4xe. Learn more at Jeep.com. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
And, you know, John noticed that at the beginning. I mean, when he assembled that team, the first thing he did, and he spent most of the preseason working on defense because he knew that that was probably going to be after what they had to hang their hat on. And, yeah, their best offensive play is still throw the ball at the rim and one of those big guys go get it. But, I mean, they've added another element, though. I mean, Proctor has become much more assertive. They still kind of need a wing, a guy who could attack off the wing. Maybe Whitehead continues to give them that. But I also love, by the way, the bracket that they have, because I think that they're an absolute horrific matchup for Zach Edey and Purdue. So, tomorrow, I saw Tennessee. I've seen them. I just don't know that they've even got the offense, even without Duke's defense, to score enough to win that game. But I just really love the way they're playing and think they've got a real shot at getting to Houston.
It's amazing. I would have never, ever, ever thought that 6 weeks ago. One thing about North Carolina, and I'll start with you, Brendan. I know there's conflicting reports of whether or not, I think, is Dontrez Styles is in the transfer portal. There are some places reporting that he is. Some places are reporting that he's not. I don't know. It does seem like he's headed that way either way. What is the state of UNC basketball today?
When it came to Styles, it didn't seem like he had a consistent role on that team.
Right.
You know what I mean? He would play, you know, he played major minutes some games, and other games you kind of barely see him as much. You know what I think is a weird thing that we kind of don't see from teams at this level? They might have just gotten tired of being around one another. And, like, usually you don't get that from UNC teams. Usually somebody's either either graduating or going to the pros or something. This team has been together for a long time. And we see this in the pros more frequently than we do it at big-time college programs now, particularly with the transfer portal. But, like, some guys just – I mean, you've been around one another for long enough, it becomes an issue. And there have been a whole bunch of reports about what was and was not going on in that locker room. But they might have just been around one another a little bit too long and they had their moment in the sun last year, maybe a little bit overachieved, came in with this this huge target on their back that maybe their talent wouldn't necessarily wasn't commensurate with their talent. And so they became this huge disappointment. Whereas if they had finished the season kind of where we thought last year that they would have, barely making the NCAA tournament and an early loss, them not making the tournament this year wouldn't be as big of a deal. They were preseason number one because they had all these people right. Coming back, with the exception of Manic. But like, maybe they were just kind of a little bit overhyped last year and walked into the season overhyped, and then some internal stuff kind of caught up with them.
They have no pros on the team. I think that
that's probably. I feel a certain way about RJ Davis sometimes when I watch him play. Bacot is probably going to play professionally. I don't know where that'll necessarily be. It kind of gives me a second round draft pick kind of a vibe, but. None of the top tier sort of stuff that we're used to seeing out of Japan.
I think Bacot can play in Japan. He can play in Israel. There's really good basketball being played all over the globe. He can go somewhere and play, but he's not an NBA player, and Davis is not an NBA player, and Caleb Love. I think Love is the best chance because he can be a game-changing offensive player, but he has zero consistency. Brett, what do you think is going on there? Or the state of the program, if you will.
The point about them being tired of being around each other is 100% spot on. I was in that locker room after the Virginia game, and I'm telling you, they didn't look angry. They didn't look sad. They looked relieved, almost like, yeah, good, let's go. Let's get out of here. And that's why it mystifies me kind of that I hear reports that Bacot and RJ and Caleb are considering coming back. Adam, that's the worst thing that could possibly happen for Hubert Davis. They need to blow this thing up. Because if you look at that core, those three guys, 3 years ago, they barely made the NCAA tournament. They got waxed by Wisconsin in the opening round. Roy leaves. Last year, they have one good month and got an incredible amount of bracket luck, right? St. Peter's in the Elite Eight.
Right.
And then this year, they reverted back to the norm. I mean, you could bang your head against the wall so many times, at a certain point, you say it hurts and you stop doing it. And bringing that crew back, that core back, you're asking for the same result. So I say, you build around Jalen Washington, build around Puff Johnson and Seth Trimble, bring in a couple of new guys off the portal so that you can play that positionless kind of free-flowing right. style that Hubert says he wants to. Because if he doesn't, Hubert's job may be on the line if this happens again next year.
Yeah, next year I know G.G. Jackson is still coming in, right? We haven't heard anything other than that, so... It could get squirrely. If they don't have a good year next year, I think there'll be a little bit of heat on Hubert Davis. But
hey, especially with Jerry Stackhouse doing what he's doing at Vanderbilt right now.
I don't see Vanderbilt in the tournament yet, so I'm just going to end that.
Jerry right Stackhouse.
He is Stackhouse, great. Brett Friedlander and Brendan Whitted here. All right, I told you I was going to talk to you about Howard, and then I'm going to ask you both a question real quick. I saw you tweet that if Howard didn't get, or if the MEAC or the SWAC didn't always get, it seems, the best team in the tournament, they might have a different story. I think you're right about that. John Calipari recognized early on that Howard was a different team. He thought they'd win their league. I know it was just after they played him and struggled. But you're just your thoughts on that was a game at halftime.
Yeah, look, the stuff that usually hurts the mid-majors, or particularly HBCUs, wasn't necessarily an issue for Howard. A thin bench, Blakeney, who, by the way, won Coach of the Year in the MEAC, Ben Jobe Award, which is awarded to the best minority coach in D1 basketball. Yep. He also won that as well. But yeah, the stuff that usually bothers them, a thin bench, he played 10 guys, or size. You had several guys that were 6'9", 6'10", on that team. That wasn't an issue where you're, trying out a 6'6" center who can get buried on the offensive and defensive rebounds. That wasn't an issue. The turnovers, which have been an issue all year, caught up with them. But they're a really, really good team. And by the way, that tweet, I love, all the Joe Lenardis hopping in my mentions telling me about, this is actually how, this is how the brackets. Thank you. Thank you, guys. You guys are just fantastic. Yes. I never heard that before being from North Carolina. I had no idea.
It's data, right? It's all data.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, right. Take that for data, 100%. But no, Howard won his conference. It won its tournament. So the MEAC and the SWAC get one. They get one a year. And so you can go through your entire year. And this happened with Central a while back. I think that Central team that beat NC State that year. Uh-huh. They were good all year long. They'd be out of conference team. And then they lost in the final or semifinal of the MEAC tournament. And they ended up going to the NIT. They made a little bit of a run there. But, like, regardless of how good your season is and who you play out of conference and how much success you have, they're only going to get one. And if you're having to beat a team that a lot of people are thinking is going to repeat in Kansas, if you got to beat them every single damn time, yeah, you're going to lose most of the time. But then when you see I think Hampton was a 14 seed when they beat Iowa State. Norfolk State was a 15 seed when they won. Like, if you don't have to go against the absolute upper echelon, like if they were Furman, if they were playing in Virginia, like, I'm not going to sit up in here and say that Howard couldn't have made a legitimate run to beat them. No, they're not going to beat Kansas. I'm not sure anybody's going to beat Kansas. But if you keep putting HBCUs in this kind of pigeonhole and then be like, oh, yeah, you don't have success. Yeah, yeah, that's why you're having to play the eventual champions. Happened with the MEAC women last year when the Howard women had to play USC, South Carolina, in the first round after beating Incarnate Word. It's like, damn, like, this is the stuff is getting stacked against us. So that's tough. But I'm so proud of this Howard team. They did a really, really good job.
All right, final thing for both of you. Brett, you first at B Freed ACC, ACC columnist, SaturdayRoad.com. Would you, if I gave you $1 million, would you let Mike Tyson punch you in the face?
Ooh, $1 million?
$1 million.
If you promised I'd live through it, yeah.
I can't promise anything. I'm going to give you $1 million after Mike Tyson punches you in the face. That's the question.
You know what? At my age, you know, it's better than Social Security. So, and I'm on Medicare, or we will be in a couple of months. So, yeah, go for it.
All right, Brendan, would you let Mike Tyson punch you in the face for $1 million?
See this face? Absolutely not. This is never going to look the same.
You know what? I think I'm with you. I don't think, even at Tyson's age right now, I think I'm with you. Brett Friedlander and Brendan Whitted. Brendan, by the way, at HU Cosell. Appreciate both of you guys. Take care, man. I wouldn't do it either. I don't think I would do it either.
With one of the best savings rates in America, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Even easier than choosing Slash to be in your band.
Next up for lead guitar. You're in.
Cool. Yep, even easier than that. And with no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, is it even a decision? That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.